Welcome to Season 8 of the Follow My Lead podcast, where each week I bring you stories and best practices of today's leaders to help you on your leadership journey. My name is John Eads. Here we go. Welcome back to Season 8, Episode 3, and your commute or your workout or wherever you're listening right now is about to get a little bit better. In this week's featured episode, we talk with Perry Tuttle. He was a first-round draft pick in the 1982 NFL Draft, and he played 10 years of pro ball, both in the NFL and the CFL. And Perry's probably best remembered for his game-winning catch during the 1982 Orange Bowl that won Clemson a national championship. He's now a noted author, speaker, and leadership coach, currently working with both organizations and professional athletes to help them navigate the marketplace with both character and integrity. He's also the chaplain of the Charlotte Hornets, and he's one of the most sincere men I've ever met. Now, when you host a podcast, you know within a few minutes of a show ending if the content in the show is going to make an impact on your audience. I can't begin to tell you how excited I was to share this show with you. Perry and I go deep on a bunch of topics, and we didn't just stay on the surface. We went deep. We talked about what athletes really experience at their end of their career. When the clapping stops, what do people really experience? Which has so many applications in today's world. We talked about how parents and kids can have better relationships. We talked about coaches and why they're so important. We went deep on faith and why it's so important that every single person says thank you to the people that made an impact on their life. I will never forget this conversation as long as I live. And I hope that it makes a big impact on you as well. And you'll take a few nuggets from it like I have, and you'll be able to implement them in your life. So without further ado, here's my interesting conversation with the one and only Perry Tuttle. Just a quick housekeeping item. We've been doing a lot of work and research around what effective leaders do differently. And we've identified 4 leader profiles based on our research. You can find out what leader profile you are for free at learnloft.com/assessment. Are you a ruler? Are you an exploiter? Are you a pleaser? Or are you a welder? Only one way to find out. Well, Perry, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, man. I'm looking forward to it.
You know, the first time I saw you, I was just a young man, and I saw you on the front cover of Sports Illustrated with your hands in the air after scoring a touchdown in 1982.
Must have been 2 years old.
I was a little older when I saw it, yeah. But take me back to that moment and how that moment's now impacted your life.
Yeah, well, you know, it was the biggest game of my life. It was against Nebraska in the Orange Bowl. And but I have to back up. So let me back up to the fourth grade, right? And so the cover that you saw is number 22. But when I was in the fourth grade, the reason I wanted number 22 was because of Bob Hayes, who played with the Dallas Cowboys back in the day when I was in the fourth grade. And I wanted to be just like Bob Hayes. He only had one route, go deep, right? So I started in the fourth grade with number 22, knowing that I had a dream of just one day making a big catch. And so in an Orange Bowl, it comes down to my last catch. Nebraska is winning. It's for the national championship. We're 11-0 at the time, playing for the big game. And the quarterback, Homer Jordan, steps into the huddle and says, hey, listen, this is what we're going to run. But if I ever nod my head, just run to the corner of the end zone. And he got under the center, nod his head, and I had to make a quick decision right then. And I ran to the corner of the end zone. The ball was perfect and caught it. As a matter of fact, I tell my children this, of 2,000 photographers that's taken, 2,000 shots during the game. And I end up on the cover of Sports Illustrated, the most recognized magazine in the world. And it changed everything. It changed not just my life, but it changed my parents. It changed my brothers and sisters. And because, you know, it's not like it is today where Sports Illustrated comes out once a week. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was on the cover, it only came out once a month and it covered the world, right? And people, for the first time, knew my name. For a whole month, I was it. The cheering that you get used to as a fourth grader, you know, where it's just your parents in the stands, right? Then you finally get to high school and there's a couple thousand. Then you go to a school like Clemson, where there are, you know, today, I mean, you got 85,000 fans, spectators, right? And if you ever get fortunate to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated, the thing that you get used to is the applause since the fourth grade. Well, for me, it has never ended. And so it changed my life in that there's this need, I think, in all of us that you want to hear somebody say, well done. Hey, way to go, right? Yeah, you're good. And so, I mean, that's really been.
And then so you went on to play in the NFL for.
Yeah.
How many years?
Yeah, so I played in the pros for 10 years. So started with Buffalo Bills, and from Buffalo, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers from you know, as a first-round draft pick with the Buffalo Bills. Then from Tampa Bay Buccaneers, to Atlanta Falcons. Then I ended up my career in the CFL with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, which I really enjoyed. But
what was it like? One area I really wanted to cover with you is in this social media world that we currently live in, where it's how many likes do you get and how many people viewed it, you know, you got applause from the fourth grade through when you retired from professional football.
Yeah.
What was that moment like for you when you retired and the applause ended? How did you handle it? And then now you work with professional athletes all the time.
Yeah.
What? Where does your mind go?
It was hard. You know, I hear people all the time talk about, boy, this athlete can't walk away from the game. You know,
Brett Favre,
or whether it's Michael Jordan. You know, Michael went from you know, retirement into baseball. It's like what Tim Tebow is going through right now, right? Mm-hmm. When the applause goes silent, it's deafening for an athlete, especially for a big time college or certainly a pro athlete. And so when you see athletes, former guys, get into trouble, or you see guys lose everything that they worked hard for their playing days, the average fan would say, man, what is up with the pro athletes, right? You know, they lose their money, they go through divorce, I mean, all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. But when the applause goes silent,
it's deafening.
Oh, let me just tell you, it's loud in your head. That's the reason you see guys wear sunglasses indoors. They say they don't want to be recognized, but they want to be recognized, right? Mm-hmm. Because they miss it. We miss it. And it's like a drug. It's that once you get used to it, and
How do you coach and mentor younger players now to better handle that situation and go one step further? How would you tell a young professional or a young person? I know, and we'll get into your kids here in a little bit, but how do you coach them since you've been through it?
Yeah, and I've had plenty of pro athletes that I've been working with for the last 20 years, and one-on-one, whether it's been friends or mentoring, it is having to decide and tell them, this is not what you're good at. It's just a God-given talent that he's given you that you can enjoy. So go catch the ball. Go go shoot the rock, right?
Right.
Go hit the home run. But that's not you, right?
It's not who you are.
That's right. And you got it. And so some of them, most of them go, it's almost like you need to shake and to keep shaking because society would tell you this is your worth and this is who you are. And we've chosen to label you as a superstar. We've chosen to label you as a professional athlete. We've chosen to now label you as a former. John, I remember I was flying out of the airport. This is in Greenville, South Carolina, not too far from Clemson. And I was waiting on my flight, and I see this father who's obviously is a big Clemson fan, and he's with his son who's about 9-10 years old. Mm-hmm. And he is trying to convince his son. I hear him talking, and he's saying, "Hey, that's Perry Tuttle." You know, I mean, and I can hear him. I'm not too far from him, but he's trying to coach his little boy and trying to convince his little boy that there's this famous guy named Perry Tuttle sitting over there, and go ask him for an autograph, right? And you can just tell that the little boy really didn't want. I mean, he didn't know me. I mean, look, I'm old and I'm decrepit, right? I mean, and so his dad, who's a big Clemson fan who watched me play and certainly in the pros, is so finally the little boy gives in and he's walking over. And John, I'm going to make his day, right? I'm going to really make his day. And I'm going to touch him on the head and I'm going to grab him by the shoulders and I'm going to pump him up. And so he has his pen, he has his little Sharpie, he has a pad, and he comes over and this is what he said. Now his dad didn't tell him to say this, but this is how the confusion of a little 9-10 year old boy. He says, "Mr. Tuttle, my dad told me that you used to be famous." Right? Now his dad heard that, but I heard it. And the thing that I wanted more than anything is to continue to hear this, right? But that little boy kind of shook me with those words, "You used to be. Get over it." Right? And that was years ago. And it kind of just taught me that that I'm more than
a football player.
And I enjoy being a dad. I enjoy being a husband. I enjoy being a friend. But so anyway, when it comes to athletes today, where society is telling us, telling professional athlete, "Man, I'm going to worship you."
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I think it kind of gives us a nice transition. You've been very intentional about fatherhood. You have 6 children.
Yeah.
Been married
29 years,
6 children.
Yeah.
You've made a transition outside of sports to be very intentional in your kids' life. You actually told me earlier about a story about a date with your daughter and a date with your son. Tell me a little bit about how that came about and the 15 questions and it's just an amazing story.
Yeah, it was my daughter, my oldest daughter. It was going to be, I've had a chance to date my girls off and on when they were small and once a month and try to get together just so that they get a glimpse of how a man should treat them once they get older, right? You know, and so this is, now my daughter is graduating from high school. She's ready to go to college. And this is going to be my last date with her. And I told her, I said, her name is Carson. I said, "Carson, this is going to be our last date. And I want you to know that I want to give you a couple of days, but you have to come up with 15 questions that you've always wanted to ask your dad. You can ask me about boys, sports, my faith. You can ask me about anything, but you have to ask me 15 questions. Not 16 and not 14, but 15. And that date lasted a little over 4 hours. Her first question was, "Dad, who was your first kiss?" And I was like,
Do I remember?
I remember, right? I was about 10 years old, and we were waiting on the school bus, ready to go to school. And there was this girl, she was in high school. And two of my buddies dared me to ask Sharon to kiss me. Now, I don't know whether she heard the right. That's when a dare really meant something yeah. back in the day, right? And so
how it happened.
I walked up to her and I said, "Hey, Sharon, would you kiss me?" And John, she kissed me on the lip. It was the best day of my life, man.
So you got a chance to go through that with your daughter in 4 hours. And it's really made me think about ensuring that my kids know me at the appropriate times and vice versa with my parents. I think it's an unbelievable example that every parent should do with their kids. And I want to take it one step further. You have your son, you put together this thing called Team Cord. And I think it's just this ridiculously good idea. Tell me a little bit about Team Cord.
Well, Team Cord is, I have six children, and my oldest son, Cord, I realized that a father can only take a son so far. So I just kind of looked around my buddies who are my age, who my son respects and like. And so I started asking my buddies, I started giving them $10 and $15 if they would take my son out to get a burger or a sandwich or a shake, right? And I would pick up the bill. But these are the questions I want you to ask him, right? And so they started doing it. And so we created this Team Cord of five older men who would, and they don't need for me to say it anymore. They're just going to do it. I have a friend who's a doctor in Greensboro, North Carolina, who flew to New York, and that's where my son is. My oldest son is now. He's getting his master's as a playwright. And so he goes up and he calls up my son. I didn't find out until a month later that they went out to dinner. Now Cord is 26 years old, mm-hmm. right? And this started in high school. And so we have Team Cord. My son now, I got another son that plays football at Clemson. And we have Team Canyon, where there are men. Like I have a buddy named Eugene Robinson who used to play back in the day.
He's a Panther.
And he played for the Falcons, played with Green Bay. I mean, he played with Seattle. I mean, the guy is he's a dear friend of mine, but he's an amazing man. And I remember asking him to be on Canyon's team. And so when Canyon comes home, he's going to look up Coach Rob, because Coach Rob is going to take him out, and they're going to have lunch. And Coach Rob is going to ask him questions, not only about his faith. He's going to ask him, how are you treating young girls? How are you doing in school? What do you need? Mm-hmm. And there are times when Canyon comes home and he goes back to school, and I find out much later that while he was at home, he got with Coach Rob. And so there are four other men who has Canyon's cell phone, and they call him up all the time.
Yeah, it's neat.
They text him. Yeah.
It's a great story. You also, I think there's a great lesson there, right? Whether what Bob Bodine would call a personal board of directors, right? So it's neat that you've done that with kids, but I think it translates to your life, to my life, to anybody's life, to have a personal board of directors, hopefully some people either older than you, and I know you had a moment in your life that you talked about really finding a clarity about who you are.
Yeah. Because of my faith, and I don't want to, because of my faith and my relationship with Christ, I realized that my Christian faith is a team sport. You can't play this game by yourself. You can't just live on an island. So what I did was I invited three of my buddies to go up to the mountain and spend a weekend with me and to kind of look in my rearview mirror of my life, and whatever is in my blind spot as a husband and as a dad, as an entrepreneur, that my three friends would tell me the truth about me. Because we all have blind spots, right? And let me just tell you, that was a tough weekend. On Friday night, my three buddies have know, they got together among themselves and they agreed, you know, this is what we're going to say. And this is what we're going to, so Friday night was hard because they told me the things that I couldn't see about me. You know, I remember one of them said, "Hey, Perry, we understand that you know a lot of people, but sometimes you have the tendency to name drop. Stop it. So if you're going to name drop from now on, let people know that you're going to name drop so that they don't get the impression that you think you know everybody." Right? And that was a hard lesson. But so I have, you know, I have my own group of guys who can either
speak into your life,
not only speak into my life, but they can call Loretta and say, "Hey, how's he doing?
Yeah.
You know, how's he treating you?"
How hard was it to open yourself up as a man that was getting all the applause, that appeared from the outside to have it all? How hard was it for you to open yourself up to having people speak in your life real truth?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I mean, it's harder than, more than what I'm making it seem.
Right,
right?
Yeah.
Because
that's not an easy thing to do. I mean,
No.
I mean, and I even think of it from a leadership perspective. I've seen a lot of business leaders that they almost do the opposite. They almost isolate themselves because they don't want to make themselves vulnerable. They don't want to put themselves in those situations, and they think they can handle it all themselves. And so it's interesting to see you take the opposite approach and to hear how big of an impact it's made on your life.
Well, look, it reminds me, there's a scene in the Bible, as in Proverbs, where it says, "The path of a righteous man, the path of a just man, is like the shining sun that gets brighter and brighter until the perfect day." So the path of a man, you know, starting at 6, 8 o'clock in the morning, you should be about 18, 19 years old. At 10 o'clock, you should be about 30, 35. You should live your life as the sun is getting to the perfect day, maybe at 2 o'clock. And so at noon, you should be around 45, 50 years old. And at 2 o'clock, you should be around 60, 65 years old. And just like the sun, your life as a man should be getting brighter and brighter. But I look around, John, and I see men, their lives are not getting brighter. They're getting dingy. And I was afraid that if I didn't have other men, other godly men who can tell the truth to me about me, that I didn't want my life to be dingy and gray. I wanted young men to look at my life now. These guys are 20 and 25 years old, that they can either hear me talk or, you know, as a father or the way I was trying to do business, they would say, "Boy, his life is bright. It's shining," right? I didn't, you know, I want to run my race in such a way, and it's not easy.
Right.
I want to run my race. When I finally get to the finish line, I want to break the tape, right? I want to cross over that finish line. I want to cross over that finish line laughing, sprinting, strong, healthy, right? I do not want to be limping when I cross over the finish line. Now, some of us, some of the stuff we can't, you know, whether it's cancer or some
health
sickness or whatever,
right.
Health, some of the stuff we can't help. But when it comes to friendship and when it comes to fatherhood and when it comes to those kinds of things, man, let's break the tape, right? Laughing with other men who are saying, "Well done, man, look, let's do this together."
Mm-hmm.
That's what I enjoy.
That's the next book, Break the Tape, you know. But coaches have made a big impact in your life, certainly because of your sports background.
Yeah.
And talk a little bit about this idea of call me coach.
Yeah, call me coach. I'm convinced that coaches today are the fishermen of Jesus' time. They're the ones. I'm convinced more than ever, especially for young African-American males, coaches are the ones that impact and bring clarity if they're intentional. And so I mentioned earlier about my fourth grade coach, Coach Pete, who introduced me to the game of football. The man was incredible. He was the first one that spoke into my life. And even in the fourth grade, he said, Perry, one day you're going to be playing in the National Football League. Right? That was amazing. But then years later, I was speaking at a university. And it was a black tie deal. It was in my hometown, Winston-Salem. And I was speaking, and this is a long story, but I try to shorten it, and that is this. I looked around in this ballroom, and I recognized seven of my coaches from the seventh grade, eighth grade, throughout high school. They all came together, bought a table at this major fundraising just to come and hear me speak. I haven't seen them in years. They've gotten a little bit older. And as I was speaking, I recognized their faces by them, kind of just secretly waving their hands at me. And it literally changed my speech and that day, because I realized that coaches have impacted my life. My dad was in and out of prison. My dad was, I can't never remember him not being drunk growing up. And it was my coaches that rescued me. They picked me up to go to practice, mm-hmm. and they took me home to go and eat dinner, right? They were the ones that the day that I signed to go to Clemson University on a full scholarship, it was my coach that sat with me and my mom because my dad was in prison. It was Coach Danny Ford, who coached me at Clemson, who showed up on my 40th birthday, unannounced, just to say happy birthday. Drove 2 hours. Coaches matter. And so I remember after I spoke at this banquet, I remember calling up a couple of my buddies who also were professional athletes, former guys. And I told them the story, and we had these amazing stories about the coaches from high school to grammar school to college, even in the pros, that have really impacted our lives. So we started this thing called Call Me Coach. How can we say thank you to the people, to the men and women, who I believe that so goes coaches, so goes our society. I think that coaches are the most important people in this nation. Not the president, not even our pastors, coaches. And you have coaches like my son, who goes to Clemson, who I appreciate Coach Dabo Sweeney for who he is and what he's teaching my son. I have an eighth grader at a school called Charlotte Latin here. And so coaches matters to me.
I have an old football coach. I was always the smallest. And I had a football coach. I'll never forget him. I mean, he got in my face one day. I wasn't giving full effort, and he knew I could give more. He knew I had more in me. And I had a helmet on, Perry. Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And that man got right in my face, and he headbutted me. I had a helmet on. He didn't, okay? And that man started bleeding from the forehead. And I'm telling you, the next play, I've never played so hard in my whole life.
Wow.
I mean, these men and women, certainly there's a lot of women coaches as well. But I think you're right. And I think now that we look at it even from a professional perspective, what role do organizational leaders have to be good coaches, right? I mean, how much should an organizational leader certainly the person is older than they are in grade school and in high school and in college, but I think the same lessons apply. I think even in the organizational perspective, organizational leaders should want that person to come to them when they're 75 years old and say, thank you.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
Much like you had or I had with sports coaches.
Yeah. About 6 or 7 years ago, I was diagnosed with a disease that's, they haven't found a cure yet. And it's like someone hit me in the stomach with this news. And so about 2 years into it, I decided that I was going to spend one whole year saying thank you to the people that have mattered to me. And so I've gone to coaches and I've gone through to high school teachers. I went to my seventh grade teacher. Haven't seen her in 20-some years, just to say thank you to her. Well, I can tell you, John, that she died a year and a half ago. She was 84 years old. And she made her children promise that I would be the one to speak at her funeral.
Mm.
And I did. 84 years old. But when I was in the seventh grade, she was in her 30s, right? She was the one that said, Perry, you can do better. And Mrs. Heal became one of my favorites. And so when I went from seventh grade through high school and then went to Clemson, I was a first-round draft pick. And I remember third year into the NFL, I got a box of donuts. You know, when you grew up in Winston-Salem, Krispy Kreme donuts, right? I got a box of donuts. I forget how many boxes of donuts that I picked them up, and I drove to North Davidson Junior High School. Knocked on Mrs. Hill's door. She's older. She sees me at the door, and we hug, and she cries, and you know, the students are excited because they see donuts, right?
Yeah. And an NFL player.
Right, yeah. An NFL player. But I wanted her to know that I'd never forgotten her.
Mm.
But not too long ago, I spent a whole year saying thank you to the people that have spoken into my life that matters to me. And so I chose about 8 people that year. And the last person I went to say thank you was to my college roommate. I called him up and I said, hey, Jeff, we were playing NC State football.
Mm-hmm.
It was a football game. And we were playing the Wolfpack. And, you know, and I called him up and I said, hey, Jeff, I'm coming to the game and I need to talk to you face to face. And he says, are you okay? Is everything okay? I mean, he knows the medical history of what I've been going through, and he was worried about that. And I said, "No, things are great, but I need to see you right before the game. So I'm gonna come on to the field right before the game, before the kickoff, and I need to tell you something face to face." And he says, "Are you okay?" I said, "I'm fine." And Saturday before the game, before the kickoff, I walked up to my college roommate. 4 years we roomed together. And I looked at him and I said, Jeff, I just want you to know you're the best roommate. I'm telling you, he's in my wedding. I'm telling you, I want you to know, thank you for being the best roommate a guy like me could ever dream of. Thank you. And
any tears?
Well, I mean, he kept saying, are you okay?
Yeah.
Are you okay? And I said, no, I'm good. But I want to say thank you, right? That was an incredible year for me, you know, where when all is said and done, man, I want to finish my race well.
You want to be laughing.
Oh,
yeah. Let's end on some fun stuff.
Okay.
Some of my favorite questions to ask. What's harder, leading at home or leading at work?
What's harder?
What's harder?
At home. Oh, yeah. I enjoy home a lot more, but leading at home because they know you, mm-hmm. you know, and they see you. They see the inconsistency, and they, but they also, you know, my children know that if anybody's going to die for them, it's going to be Dad. So we have a good time.
Yeah.
You know, I love being a dad. And I will confess on your show, John, that I'm a better dad than I am a husband. Mm. Right? I know my bride would want that to be the opposite, but the truth of the matter is, I love being a dad. I really do.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a good goal for you then for this coming year to be a better husband.
Yeah, you know? That's right. That's right.
If you could have dinner with any three leaders, living or dead, who would those three leaders be?
Wow, what a great question. I think there's some things that I want to ask Paul.
The Apostle Paul. Okay.
You know, I mean, there's a scene in which he is talking, and he says, you know, when I was a child, I spoke as a child, I reasoned as a child, but he came to a point where he said, I put away childish things, and I became a man, right? And honestly, John, I want to kind of reach into the Bible and grab Paul by the shoulders, or at least by the collars, and say to Paul, and ask Paul, Paul, what does it feel like to be a man? Because I'm telling you, man, I'm confused at times, right?
Yeah,
it's just kind of wacky. But there's something inside of me that want to have a face-to-face moment with Paul and go, damn it, about it. Right? What does that feel like?
Yeah.
That's
one.
He's one. I think Abraham Lincoln would be one, only because I want to find out, as a leader of a country, what kind of courage, what did he say, what did he think, what did his parents say about black people? What was the motivation behind getting to a point where when a lot of the people were saying, we're not equal. You know, there was a race, there's a group of white folks who said, we're much better, right? I would love to have dinner with him and ask him, what does that feel like? What?
Why?
Why?
Yeah.
And so anyway.
He's one of my favorite. I mean, I've written a lot about him, and I've studied him a great deal. And he failed more than any, even politically. I mean, he lost, something like 9 times before he won his. How many times do you have to get back up to say, I'm meant to do something great?
Yeah.
You know, I'm called to do something great. And if I have to lose 9, how hard it must have been to say, I'm going to put my name back in that hat.
Yeah.
9 times.
Yeah. I love that. I love that.
I think that's interesting.
And the last person is that I really, I'm going to have this day again. 8 years before my dad died, he gave his life to Christ. Started walking with the Lord. Started treating my mom, best he know how, like a queen. Other than my bride and other than my 6 children, I don't know if I've ever loved a man like I loved my dad the last 8 years. He was the most racist man I've ever known. Did not like white people at all. And I started asking him questions when he came to faith, and of all of the wasted time, mm-hmm. right? The anger. And he had, you know, he had good reasons for some of his anger. But now that I know, it was just such a short time where we, you know, now I was a dad and, you know, he's older and he got sick and all of a sudden he's gone, right? And so there's, you know, not the leader of Abraham Lincoln and not the leader of Apostle Paul, but what I've come to find out, now that I can talk to my mom, my dad did the best he knew how, right? With a fourth grade education. But he finished the race well, right? I mean, he was just so good.
Yeah, that's great. And we appreciate you. We're better with you being here. What are you working on? Anything you want to highlight, or how can people find out more about what you're doing?
I mean, there's a couple of things. I'm a part of a team called Vertigo Music. And Vertigo Music is, you can download, I won't tell you the whole thing, but you can download from the App Store, Vertigo Music, sharing music live. It's an incredible project. And
I'll give the plug.
It allows
you to listen to what other people are listening to, and listen to the same playlist, and listen to the same songs. It's an unbelievable application. It's awesome.
Oh man, I'm telling you, we're having so much fun with it. So I'm doing that. I'm speaking a lot, but more than anything, I've decided years ago, about 4 years ago, I started working on this plan, John. How can I be a dad 75% of my time and an entrepreneur 25% of my time, but make the same kind of money? And so we're working on this plan, and it's hard, but that's what I'm working on.
Oh, good.
I mean, it's all good.
Well, we so appreciate you being here and sharing such great stories and insight, and you're welcome back anytime.
John, thank you. I really appreciate my time with you.
I hope you enjoyed another episode of the Follow My Lead podcast. Again, it's a real pleasure and honor to bring you stories and best practices to help you on your leadership journey. It would mean a great deal to us if you would leave a review and recommendation on iTunes or wherever you listen to the podcast. It helps us reach more people. If you have any feedback or questions, you can reach out to info@learnloft.com. Until next time, be a good leader at home and at work.